Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
It's the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
And the gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
From the SportsMap Radio Studios, here's David Gal
and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
Welcome in, everyone. I am David Gal, the boss. Next to me, Carla Dawson, the gloss. We got Sean Mapes behind the glass. How are you guys doing tonight?
Better now. We're all together again. Sean, what's shaking?
I'm doing good. It was a tight one for the Texas Longhorns, as Carla was so eager to point out before
overtime
the show started.
Against those Wildcats of Kansas State.
Yes, but a win's a win.
A win's a win,
especially when you're with your backup quarterback. Can't look a gift horse in the mouth. So there
absolutely.
We go.
I love that positivity, Sean.
Is fun on Monday is we can come in and look at each other and almost read our faces in the mood on what happened over the weekend. But we'll get to those things.
We will get to those things because there was a lot of happenings.
Tonight we have Monday Night Football and a pretty good matchup when you consider it is the Chargers at the Jets, which is an important game for both, really, in their pursuit of the playoff berth. I will say the Jets are a better team right now, or at least have a better record than anybody thought when Aaron Rodgers went down week one. They have strung together some wins. They've got three in a row. That core four, the elite draft class of 2022, performing at a high level. That was an extraordinary group, and they are performing well. You got Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson, Jermaine Johnson, Breece Hall. Those four in that 2022 draft for the Jets have really set a tone for that team.
I mean, you're right. The Jets are far outperforming, given that Aaron Rodgers has basically not even taken a snap since he was in. Well, he hasn't taken a snap since he was injured. And I will say, the pass defenders that you're talking about, they, for the Jets, only allow about 184 yards per game on average and have intercepted quarterbacks eight times this season. So while the Jets' record is pretty darn good, I will say it really doesn't have anything to do with Zach Wilson. In fact, it's in spite of Zach Wilson, who has, up to this point of the season, eight turnovers to two touchdowns on the season. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, his performance has been very lackluster. It is a bit of a surprise to me that at the trade deadline, the Jets didn't go out and try to pick up another quarterback. I mean, look at what the Vikings did after Kirk Cousins' injury. They went out and got Joshua Dobbs, and he has already made a difference.
The darling of the weekend. The darling of the weekend.
He is one of the great stories in the NFL, and we're going to get to him in a future segment. Really impressive to see what he did. Jets, though, continuing to ride the Zach Wilson horse and cling to this sort of really odd long-distance hope that maybe Aaron Rodgers is going to return this year. It would be a miraculous recovery from his Achilles tear.
And I think that's what they're hanging on, because in their last three games, the Jets have only scored three offensive touchdowns. So I don't think they're riding the Zach Wilson horse. They're putting him behind center and riding that defense.
Well, the Chargers are favored by 3.5 points, even though the game is a road game for the Chargers, but the Chargers have a stellar quarterback in Justin Herbert. He's fresh off a 122.7 passer rating against the Bears on Sunday Night Football last week. He threw for 298 yards, three touchdowns, no picks. He was outstanding against the Bears, but that was against the Bears. The question, of course, with the Chargers has not been quarterback play. Herbert's outstanding. It's been the head coach, Brandon Staley.
It's the head coach. And I think you remember me saying at the start of this year that the only thing in the way of the Chargers success and long-term season is Brandon Staley. And I stick by that. It hasn't changed.
Well, it's borne out already this year.
Yeah.
Chargers still in the hunt, and they have a real shot at the playoffs, but they're going to have to put some wins together. They need to have a really good streak, and they're in the tough AFC West. Chiefs are looking very good, so the Chargers will be angling for a wild card.
Yeah, they will. What I would caution Chargers fans is the longer you keep with Brandon Staley, you can see that Justin Herbert, like you mentioned, he had an incredible game against the Bears last week. However, he is not, I see a little regression rather than him getting better. He does fine against, you know, lesser opponents. I would say don't wait too long if you start seeing if that trend continues.
There were some marquee games yesterday, some really good teams. It was Chiefs over Dolphins, Eagles over Cowboys, and Ravens clobbering the Seahawks. All three games had matchups of elite teams or semi-elite teams, teams aspiring to be elite, teams on the cusp of winning divisions, those kinds of teams. Chiefs beating the Dolphins in a game in Germany, of all places. And what stood out to me in that game was that the Chiefs' defense looks like the best defense that Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes have ever had in Kansas City.
I do think that, weirdly, aside from the quarterback, the strength for the Chiefs is their defense.
And that statement alone should turn our heads.
Yes.
Because it has not been that way for
ever.
A very long time.
In fact, that has been their weaker spot. They don't really have a weak spot. But you look at that receiving core, and I know, like, in many games, Mahomes uses 11 receivers. There are more drops than we have ever seen with Kansas City. And I think that I was surprised they didn't pick up a receiver at the trade deadline. I think that's definitely their weakness. And that was evident yesterday. And honestly, I think what it said to me was the Chiefs are doing great with defense. Yesterday's game told me more about Miami. And you know, I have been reluctant to get on the Dolphin train. I think Mike McDaniel is an incredible coach. They have offensive weapons beyond. They've got a really good defense. But I have to tell you, I'm in the pretender camp with Miami. And I'll tell you why. Their record is very good, obviously. But they are 6-3 as of yesterday. The Dolphins, they're 6-0 versus teams with losing records. And they average 6-0 versus, yes. Excuse me, I don't even know what I'm saying here. 3-0 versus teams with winning records, losing records. And they average almost 40 points per game. They are 0-3 with teams with winning records. And they only average 17 points a game. To me, they bully the bad teams, but they can't close out the teams that have the winning records. And honestly, I don't want to say this to you because I fear this, but I see that a little bit with the Cowboys. Not to the extent, because the Cowboys don't start out slow, but they can't get those inches and those little things right to close out the big guys. Does that make sense to you, and how do you feel about it?
Well, yeah, so let's shift gears. Cowboys fell to the Eagles, but in a really good, hard battled game, right?
And a well-played game by Dak Prescott.
And it's so interesting to me because you mentioned the word inches, because it really was a game of inches in so many different ways. And let me just highlight a few. First of all, when you think inches, you got to think about the tush push, because that play is so effective for the Eagles. It does shorten the down and distance scenario. It's been an amazing revelation to the league to see the Eagles use that play, use it so regularly, and use it when they're even at their end of the field. It's fascinating how effective they are at it. But it's a game of inches. Second, the turning point to me in that game was when Jalen Hurts perhaps had injured his knee, had to leave the game, and then came
after the Micah Parsons tackle.
After he was sacked by Micah Parsons, injured by DeMarcus Lawrence. But he came back into the game, and he threw a deep ball down the left side to Devontae Smith, and it was a game of inches. Deron Bland's coverage was actually pretty good.
Yes, agreed.
But again, inches. Perfect pass, perfect catch. Devontae with the touchdown. Another point of inches was obviously when Dak was trying to convert a two-point play, a two-point conversion, he stepped out of bounds, just missing the pylon, therefore, by inches again, and that was a swing point because the 2 points would have put the Cowboys within three, within a field goal of tying. And then the other one that I just have to highlight was the tight end Luke Schoonmaker's catch on fourth and goal. Fourth and goal, Cowboys going for it. It was called a touchdown on the field, but then the replay showed it was just inches short. Again, a matter of inches. By the way, on that play, I want to just highlight one point that really nobody has talked about. That was pass interference. Go back and watch. I watched it five times over. What happened on the field with the call was the pass was thrown to Luke Schoonmaker. He caught it, but as he caught it, he was falling down. And, of course, his knee hit short of the pylon, short of the end zone. But why was he falling down? He was being tackled before he caught the ball. Now, nobody called that because on the field, the call was a touchdown. So you don't have to worry about PI. And then they went and reviewed it. And when they reviewed it, oh, no, it's not a touchdown. But if you look at the review, it was PI. But PI is not a penalty you're going to overturn. So that was pass interference on fourth down that would have given the Cowboys a first down. These are inches. So close. I actually came out of that game feeling very good about the Cowboys. This is the amazing narrative. The narrative is, oh, the Cowboys are idiots. They can't execute. They can't win. Do you realize what they just did? They went in to Philadelphia, one of the most hostile environments to ever play a game. They faced the team with the best record in the entire NFL, and they had them on the ropes. Don't go to Nick Sirianni and say, oh, the Cowboys are a laughingstock, aren't they? Which is what you hear on the media today. Nick Sirianni sighed a big element of relief.
Nick Sirianni knows.
He knew.
And he's going to have to face you all again in
Dallas. Very, very close. And to lose to a team by five like that on the road, you know, Vegas gives the home team a three-point swing. Well, okay, so 3 points for just being in Philadelphia, and they lost by five. And it very well could have been the other way. Again, just
that
inches.
2-point conversion. There's the other two to your,
it's
make
your right
five.
There. And, of course, they'll play again in Dallas. Dallas is very effective at home. I think, look, I told you last week, I said, I'm sure these two teams are going to split. They know each other so well. They're division rivals, and they're likely to split. I think when we get back to game two, I think the Cowboys will probably win that. The Eagles will win the division. But this is exactly where everybody thought they would be. I mean, the howls of what happened to the Cowboys? Well, they're 5-3, and they're second place in the division to the Eagles. Did anybody expect anything otherwise?
Exact great points.
All right, when we come back, we're going to look at C.J. Stroud and his magnificent game as a rookie
exciting.
For the Texans. That up next here on Sports Map Radio.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Agunba Wale, 7-year NFL veteran, normally a running back. The field goal attempt is good. Houston leads. Smiles for everybody inside the stadium.
That was Ian Eagle of CBS Sports.
On the call, that was amazing.
On the call, when a backup running back had to come in and kick a field goal for the Texans.
I mean, on a day when C.J. Stroud, rookie quarterback, has set an NFL record, you know who's being celebrated more than that? Dare Ogunbowale.
Well, I'm impressed you could say that
oh
name.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, 7 years in the NFL, and, you know, he was – this was the first time since 2004 – that a non-kicker has kicked a field goal. It was Wes Welker for Miami. How crazy is
fun
that?
Fun to see. Well, of course.
Go Ogunbowale. He's
on the
new
one
manager,
hand,
new MVP.
No team has a backup place kicker, so somebody has to get ready to do it. And now the good news is kickers don't get injured very often.
No, they really
but
don't.
They can always pull a hammy. They're stretching their leg out, and you've got to have somebody ready to go. And in this case, it was a backup running back for the Texans. Very fun to see.
He's only played in one game this season for the Texans. Yeah. I mean, he's just kind of, you know, God bless
him. Not been
him.
On the active squad.
No, but boy, did he earn his keep.
Well, the guy who earned his keep yesterday and really turned heads across the league was C.J. Stroud, the number two draft pick, a rookie quarterback. I mean, his stats were out of this world.
I watched the game, And it was a very stressful game. If you have heart issues, I wouldn't have watched that. There were so many lead changes.
Yes.
I mean, Stroud, he went 75 yards in 46 seconds and scored with six, you know, that pass to Tank Dell, U of H guy right here, first U of H Cougar ever on the Texans roster, to win that game with 6 seconds left on the clock. I mean, he is so poised. I mean, 75 yards against a Bucs defense. And I mean,
yeah, that final drive when the game really did seem over, because credit Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers, they came down, they scored. It looked like the game was over.
Well, credit the Texans penalties. There were a lot of very untimely penalties and some really bad calls.
The thing that I am most impressed about, or was really thinking a lot about when I looked at this extraordinary performance by Stroud, was, remember just last week, of course, the Texans fell to the Panthers. Oof. And I was so frustrated at the Texans' offense.
At the coaching.
At the coaching, because basically that offense was so vanilla. They didn't do anything. They didn't throw the ball downfield.
It was conservative.
It was so conservative. It was dink and dunk and runs all the time. And then this week it felt like they let him go. They let C.J. Stroud show what he can really do. They let him throw the ball downfield. It was such a difference between last week versus this week. And maybe part of it was they thought they could beat the Panthers just by playing a conservative game. I mean, the Panthers are not very good. They thought they could beat the Panthers with just a conservative game plan. Don't turn it over and you'll inevitably beat the Panthers. And maybe they thought this week, no, we're going to have to unleash Stroud and let him throw the ball. But boy, you gave him the chance. This is the first game really where he's been able to really throw the ball a ton. 42 attempts, 30 completions, 5 touchdowns and 470 yards.
He broke Andrew Luck's all-time rookie record from 2012. And he is only the 6th player in NFL history that has 450 yards, 5 TDs, and 0 interceptions in a game. Like, this is insanity. And what I think, David, you bring up a really good comparison to last week where the coaching really handicapped C.J.
Held him
Stroud.
Back.
And what we have to remember, you know, when you're looking at the Texans, whether you're a Texans fan or not, you've got a rookie quarterback, first time in the NFL, and a rookie head coach in DeMeco Ryans. So there's going to be these peaks and valleys. And, you know, that game last week was a prime example of rookie coaching. Credit DeMeco Ryans. He watched that tape. He learned from the film. He knew what he had to do. Because what he let Stroud do yesterday was get it done. Not only get it done, such a tight game, 39-37 win, but in many different ways. He knows how to drop pinpoint passes right into these soft spots. He has these zip passes that go into these tight windows where I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what are you doing? But arguably the most impressive thing that I saw CJ do yesterday is what should be really his marquee to an incredible career in the NFL, God willing, is that Stroud throws receivers open with anticipation.
Mm.
And that is something that you really don't see with rookies very often. And he ranks 7th in the NFL right now in passing yards and is tied 7th in touchdown passes with 14. His touchdown to interception ratio is 14-1. We are seeing greatness right now. And as we're broadcasting here from Houston, let me tell you, we are not used to massive headlines that are positive. We're used to massive headlines that are doomsday. This is something we're not used to.
No, it's been a long desert for Houston Texans football. It's as if a big storm and rain has come and made the ground all beautiful again. It's just an amazing window and breakthrough for him. You know, it's interesting because the big knock on him coming into the draft was that S2 test. It's a brand new test, and it was supposed to discern how well a quarterback can process things on the field. Mm-hmm. And of course, the previous year, Brock Purdy had scored really, really well on it. And so the 49ers took a flyer on him at the end of the draft. And everyone was wondering, how can Brock Purdy be so good? Well, he did well in the S2 test, was the narrative last year. Then coming into this draft, CJ Stroud, he bombed the test. Therefore, he'll never progress as an NFL quarterback. That was the narrative. Texans did not get scared away. A lot of teams didn't get scared away. He was a highly rated guy coming in, but that was the only real knock on him was how he tested, which means you can almost overthink these things because he had been extraordinary at Ohio State. He'd had that incredible game against Georgia, and now you see it translating here on the field in the NFL.
I think the point that you're making, which is a really good one, is that I think to really evaluate talent, you want a multimodality type of approach. You want to look at the analytics. You want to look at scores. You want to look at, obviously, their performance. But you know what? There are intangibles that you can't measure. You can't measure. I mean, Tom Brady, give me a break.
He's not a physical specimen. He did not have great arm talent. He didn't have great speed.
No.
But there's something about the way he saw the field. His processing power was a big thing. And that's why I worried about that S2 test because everybody said you should.
But his work ethic is off the charts. He treats a win like a loss.
Yep.
C.J. Stroud treats a win like a loss.
Always improving. Always working.
Yes.
Film study.
Yes.
Leadership in the locker room. He's got all those intangibles. And it's really showing up on Sundays.
And what, you know, for those that don't know the backstory with C.J. Stroud, came from this wonderful family, mom, dad, siblings. Dad is imprisoned when C.J. Stroud is a teenager. Their life changes forever. And you know what? To get through that and to process having to go from a nice neighborhood to a little apartment, mom working how many jobs to keep the family afloat, dad still in prison, and he's forgiven his dad, all of this, that takes so much grit and so much heart and so much processing that's something that a lot of people don't go through. So there are immeasurables that play into the person that he is. I would say the C.J. Stroud era has begun. You're welcome, Houston. He's your guy.
And of course, with the number 3 overall pick, they got Will Anderson, the standout pass rusher from out of Alabama, and he's starting to make a mark for that Texans defense as well.
Yeah, he doesn't show up on the stat sheets as much, but watch him. I mean, that's a treat to watch him. He's a presence.
You can see the talent, the strength, and the speed. The combination, the physical tools are all there. He's going to put it all together and be a force for the Texans defense.
I promise you that offenses see him, but it's hard when the numbers don't show up how it translates. But he's one to watch.
Okay, we've only got about a minute to go. I did want to get to that other marquee matchup that we didn't cover last segment, which is the Ravens just clobbering the Seahawks, because coming into this game, the Seahawks were considered borderline elite. They were
A battle of two first-place teams yesterday.
That's right. I mean, the Seahawks came into this game with a record of 5-2, and there were whispers that maybe they could, in fact, be the team that wins the NFC West, but the Ravens had a beatdown on them, and the Ravens seemingly sent a message to the league.
Yeah, they really did. And they're winning in different ways. And their defense, it just shows how key it is to have a really incredible defense. I mean, Baltimore rolled up 298 rushing yards on the Seahawks, who are averaging 160 rushing yards per game, the most in the NFL by nearly 13 yards. I mean, they went 100 yards past their average. I mean, they were incredible, absolutely incredible.
I'll tell you that game just sort of flushed out of me a suspicion I've had within that there's a ceiling on the Seahawks because it's Geno Smith. It's a great story, but I don't think he's going to be a guy who can lead them to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and maybe a ceiling on Pete Carroll as well.
All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Randy Mueller of The Athletic. We're going to ask him about the state of the Browns. They have a great defense, and Deshaun Watson's returning to form. They face the Ravens next week. It'll be Randy Mueller next on Sports Map Radio.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, Sports Map Radio, and joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is Randy Mueller. He is co-host of the Football GM podcast for The Athletic. Randy, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Good to be back with you.
Yeah, it's always good to have you.
Randy.
Our Google page. We're counting on you.
All right, sounds good.
Well, you know, we're dying to ask you about different teams and matchups coming up in the league. And one of the things I find most interesting is the Browns now, because they are seemingly putting things together. Their defense is really good. Deshaun Watson needs to return to form, but he's showing glimpses. And the Browns face the Ravens next week in what will be a very important matchup for both teams. How do you read the Browns today? What's their ceiling as we sit?
Well, I've been impressed with the Browns. In fact, I saw them live a week ago in Seattle when they played the Seahawks and actually lost, but I felt they were the better team for over half the game.
I agree.
Yeah. P.J. Walker has carried the torch as well as he can, but I do think Deshaun Watson coming back gives them a little extra juice. He played better yesterday, as we all know. I think their defense speaks for itself. Anytime you have Myles Garrett, he's got to be reckoned with wherever he lines up, and he can wreck a game if not. So they have a really solid defense. I think they can stop the run. They can do really a lot on defense and really show no weakness. So I think defense is travel. And in that league, you need a traveling defense because, as you know, if the playoffs started today, everybody in the AFC North would be in the playoffs. So I'm bullish on the Browns, especially if Deshaun can get back a little bit of that flame that was there 3 years ago.
Yeah, and I think yesterday Amari Cooper was such a good veteran, calm presence for Deshaun Watson. He had 5 receptions for 135 yards and a touchdown. That's a great little relationship and a great way to get Deshaun back into rhythm.
I think you're right. I think one advantage they have, and I've always thought this, the head coach, when he's the offensive play caller, can really affect the game and manage the game. And I think Kevin Stefanski does a good job of that. He's understanding of field position, of score, of time on the clock. It's just easier for those guys in that role to kind of manage a game. I thought he did as good as he could 2 weeks ago in Seattle. Obviously, yesterday was easier for him because they were out ahead, and it was not the greatest of competition. But I think he does a really good job of that, and that bodes well in tight division games, and I think we'll see that from Kevin down the line here.
Yeah, I think he's a great pick for the Browns, and it seems like he's steadying a franchise that has really had a lot of volatility, to say the least.
Yeah.
But Randy, you mentioned Seattle. Well, probably not the game you wanted to see yesterday. What looked like it was a battle of two first place teams, and it ended looking like men versus boys. What do you make of what's going on in Seattle? Have we seen the ceiling with Geno Smith? How do you feel about Pete Carroll? Was yesterday a one-off? Would love your thoughts. You're very into all the things in with the Seahawks, and would just love to hear your thoughts about yesterday. That was a crazy game, 37-3, Ravens.
Well, yeah, that game for two first-place teams was over quickly, that's for sure. And I do think it's more of a one-off than a trend. Seattle has been a steady team all year long, although not flashy. I do think there are some limits on Geno, and everybody knows that. Everybody has the respect for Geno's year last year, and I think they were hoping to get some of that this year. It's been a struggle. I think the big thing for Seattle is they've not ran the ball effectively, and they've got to go back to doing that in order to give Geno a chance. They've had a lot of volatility up front with their offensive line, but still, they've won their share of games. And to be honest with you, going to Baltimore, that's a game that Seattle normally, in Pete's tenure, they've gone and played really well, and they've won some of those games. As you know, they went back and beat the Lions this year in Detroit. So the East Coast time zone doesn't really bother Seattle. I think in the end, they'll come back. They'll play better. They seem to bounce back and be accountable for what they've done. I like what they did at the trade deadline in picking up the big defensive lineman, Williams, and that's going to help them when he gets more settled in their system as well. So I'm still okay with where the Seahawks are. I think they'll be a playoff team at the end of the day, but it was sure a one lopsided affair yesterday in Baltimore. That's for darn sure. Mm-hmm.
We're talking to Randy Mueller. He is the former NFL Executive of the Year in 2000 with the Saints. And Randy, I do want to ask you about another NFL executive, Bill Belichick, and the Patriots losing to the Commanders. Patriots fall to a record of 2-7 now. What's going to happen in New England? And do you think Bill Belichick will be coaching that team next year?
Well, that's really hard because I know of what Bill has done. None of us dispute that. I think it's kind of gotten to the point where Bill Belichick, the GM, has let down Bill Belichick, the head coach, these last couple of years. And his record without Tom Brady is pretty pretty apparent, and that's a struggle. But this team is void of talent. They just struggle to line up, whether it's Mac Jones or not. They don't have many weapons around him. Their offensive line hasn't played great. So it's really, in my opinion, a team that he put together, his crew put together, and it's probably due for a retool or a rebuild. I guess the question is, do you let Bill retool it? So to answer your question, I don't know his contract status. I know this, that Mr. Kraft, Jonathan, his son, they are good business people. And if they feel like there's something to be had for moving Bill Belichick along, I think if the price was right, maybe they listen. So those things happen. That's just the way of the world in the NFL. It's a long run. It's been an awesome, unprecedented run for them in New England, but it's inevitable. Change happens. So it may be that happens this year. I do not have any insight on what they're thinking, but again, if they see a team like I do in that it needs to be not only retooled, but probably even deeper rebuilt, I'm not sure that they wouldn't be best served to change directions and let somebody else maybe at least be the GM side to build the head coach.
Randy, I read about a month ago that last year at the end of the season that Robert Kraft met with Bill Belichick and said, you know, like, basically, listen, you're still our guy as long as we're moving in the right direction and there's some progress being made. And, you know, there needs to be a mutual understanding that if there's not, we're going to have to make a change. And your point of, hey, this is business. This is a business. Yep. They probably will move on if it continues to be a disaster or just at this same pace. You know, under the Belichick tree, Randy, I'd love to ask you about Josh McDaniels, who just lost his job this week, second head coaching job that he lost in season. With the Las Vegas Raiders. What do you think about that? And do you think this is his last opportunity at being an NFL head coach? And what does he do next?
Well, I would think it probably is. I think it's more affirmation that it is a people business. You have to communicate. You have to work together on so many fronts. I don't think you can be a dictator in this world, not 2023. And that may have got him a little bit again. I do think Josh McDaniels is a very good coach. I think he will get an offensive coordinator job, and I would think if Bill's back there, he'll have a seat warm for him because he did a really good job there. So I just think as a leader, you've got to be a little more cognizant of others and building a little bit of a consensus. And in this day and age, the players need to have a voice, and I just don't know that happened there. It ended up that it sounded like, if the reports are true, a lot of the players bypassed him and the GM and went right to the owner. And we all know that that's not the hierarchy of communication for success, that's for sure.
Randy, I'd love to get your insights on the two quarterbacks who went number one and two yesterday. Bryce Young, of course, struggled. C.J. Stroud shined. What's your read on the two of them and their development right now?
Well, I must admit I'm not shocked. I thought it would be a struggle for Bryce because, as we know, and it sounds simplistic, but it is a big man's game, and it's never been done at his size before, especially when you pick him first in any draft. And I think C.J. Stroud has more of the traditional frame, size, the whole bit, and as you mentioned. And I just happened to watch the C.J. Stroud film this morning from yesterday. That 470 yards, which was a rookie record, could have been 570, yes, if not for a couple drops and a couple misfires. So
right,
it could have been a lot worse or a lot better if you're C.J. Stroud. So I think the Texan fans have to be ecstatic that it worked out like this. I think a lot of the NFL probably saw this order. It was a little bit of a surprise to me that the Panthers went the route they did with C.J., you know, being the other option. And I think because the Panthers did it, everybody jumped on board as saying the intangibles were too much to pass on with regard to Bryce Young. Obviously, now it looks like they may have made a mistake there, and that's a hard one to overcome. I can only feel bad for Panther fans because when C.J. Stroud is at his best, it's going to be hard for Bryce Young to match it.
He is Randy Mueller. You can hear him. It is the Football GM Podcast on The Athletic. Randy, thank you so much for joining us.
You bet, guys. Take care.
Great to have you.
The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, Sports Map Radio. And, you know, we were talking about marquee matchups. And there are a lot of weeks when it seems like the good teams are all playing bad teams. But we talked about several really good games. I mean, Chiefs over Dolphins, Eagles over Cowboys, Ravens over Seahawks. But another one, Bengals over Buffalo. I mean, those are two elite teams. And it would seem right now that the Bengals are soaring and the Bills are fading from view.
Yeah. You know, that was a tough game to watch. That was an interesting game because the Bengals scored first and quickly and easily. And I thought, oh, I don't know. I don't have enough faith in the Buffalo brass, meaning the coaching staff, that they're going to be able to overcome this. And they really couldn't. I mean, I think that Sean McDermott is a great coach. And Sean McDermott steadied a franchise that was spiraling in the wrong direction. I do think that maybe there's a ceiling on his coaching. I don't see a lot of creativity. Josh Allen is very turnover prone. They don't seem to be, like you were mentioning earlier, how much the Cowboys defense has changed since their bye week.
Or the Cowboys offense.
I mean, offense.
Out of the break, yeah.
Out of the break. And how much better Dak has been performing. I mean, that's the kind of thing that Sean McDermott needs to, and his OC needs to have happen with Josh Allen. So I thought that game last night was, what it said to me was for the Bengals, when your guy is healthy, i.e. Joe Cool, no one can stop y'all.
He's amazing.
And this team fully trusts him. He's got that locker room, and they are locked and loaded with Joe Mixon and T. Higgins, and they've got weapons all over the place, and they trust Joe. In Joe, we trust. So, Bengals, as long as your quarterback is good, y'all are good, and sky's the limit. I feel like with Buffalo...
Well, can I say something about the Bengals before you get to the... One thing I wanted to say about him, I find this almost amusing, but several weeks ago, after Brock Purdy just crushed the Cowboys and was so good, Rex Ryan said he reminds me of Joe Montana. And obviously now we're here 3 weeks later and Purdy's hit some struggles.
They're on a three-game losing streak.
49ers are on a three-game losing streak. So I'm reluctant to say this, but in a similar vein today, there was a conversation that Joe Burrow reminds everyone of Tom Brady. And,
oh, gosh.
Well, but why not, right? I mean, there he is. They're both cool under fire.
Microwave Monday.
Yes, it is. But Burrow has a body of work, right? It's not just a one-game thing. He's been extraordinary. And when healthy, I mean, he needs his feet. It's interesting. He needs the ability to move out. And when he strained his calf and he was static in the pocket, wasn't the same. But when he can look for his reads and then start to drift out and buy himself time, his ability to see the field and throw it at different angles is really exceptional. I don't know if it is too early to compare him to Tom Brady, but his style, his mojo, his attitude, and his ability to see the field, I get the comparison.
I get that he is excellent. I do. I'm not ready to compare anybody to Tom Brady because even Patrick Mahomes, their style is so very different. But speaking of Mahomes, what I say about Burrow and company is, as long as he's healthy, I think their ceiling is very high because they have knocked off the Kings, i.e. the reigning Super Bowl champs in the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. They went in there at Arrowhead and beat them and sent Cincinnati to the Super Bowl. So I think, okay, they have done it at that level. Now, you have to keep doing it. You can't say that was good enough. But I think they've got the pieces and their O-line has gotten better since then. So I think they're going to be fun to watch. But remember the beginning of the season, everyone was like, oh, look at Cincinnati. Can't win a game. That's going to be a terrible season. No. I mean, when he's healthy, I don't know. They look darn good.
It would have been just a few weeks ago, we would have said the dominant teams at the top of the AFC would include Buffalo, maybe even the Dolphins, because they had just put 70 points on the Broncos. But right now, the teams of the moment, at least, you have to count the Chiefs near the top of the AFC. And it's exciting to see that they have some defense. They've got work to do on the offense. But note Patrick Mahomes' words yesterday. I mean, after the game, he said, we love our defense. And don't worry, he said to his fans, we're going to get this offense right. And if that's true, look out, because the Chiefs are exceptional.
Well, I will say to that point, too, you know who's not there? Eric Bieniemy is no longer the OC in Kansas Noted. City.
That's right.
So they have been without Tyreek Hill for a couple years, and they won a Super Bowl. There's not that much difference from last year's roster and this year's roster as far as receivers go. They let Mecole Hardman go to the Jets. The Jets let him come back because he was terrible with the Jets. So guess what? He's just not that good anymore.
He's a non-factor right
but
now.
But I think the Bieniemy factor does not get talked about enough. And meanwhile, you're seeing, while there's a lot of inconsistency in Washington, and I think Ron Rivera, not sure that he's the guy to lead him, they're really happy with Sam Howell. He's putting up some crazy numbers. And that, to me, has a lot to do with Eric Bieniemy.
Okay. Top of the AFC. Chiefs are certainly on the short list.
Mm-hmm.
I think with that win, the Bengals deserve consideration.
Sure.
And then the Ravens have been so dominant the last couple of weeks.
Oh, my gosh.
And they've developed this running game, and they've got a running back that seemingly came out of nowhere and lit up the Seahawks yesterday. A very exciting win for them.
Keaton Mitchell. Do you know Keaton Mitchell? Did you have him on your
boards
anywhere?
No one has heard of him. East Carolina?
Undrafted rookie.
Undrafted rookie. And he was outstanding yesterday.
139 yards. And a score on 9 carries. Like, what? That's incredible.
Well, look out. And part of it is, of course, when they're doing the RPO, everybody has to worry about Lamar.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, actually, a defense might be more set up to stop Lamar from running than a no-name running back from East Carolina. But that will be different next week because he was very effective yesterday.
Well, and you know, when you have a stat like this, that the Ravens, they had over 40 minutes of possession. Like, that's two-thirds of the game.
Yeah, you can't have that.
It's really tough to win when you don't have the ball, when you only have the ball for about 20 minutes.
So on the short elite list in the AFC, we got Chiefs, Bengals, Ravens. Would you put the Jaguars in there?
I would.
Record-wise, they're 6-2. They're going to win their division, it would surely seem.
Yep.
And you put that, you think the Jaguars are sort of in that elite level now?
I do. And, you know, they had a bye week. That's why we're not talking about
them.
But, yes. No, I absolutely do.
And Trevor Lawrence, still a developing quarterback. You think he now is at a spot where he could take his team deep into the playoffs?
I do. I think he could, depending on how the rest of the season goes, he could be in an MVP conversation. I mean, that might be premature, but he is moving in that direction. He's no longer. I mean, he's with the big boys now, and he's playing like it.
Okay, lastly, before we end the segment, I really did want to get to the Josh Dobbs story.
Wow, I love that story.
What an amazing story. His coming in. I really didn't even know or hadn't played in the Vikings offense at all, and yet led them to this big-time win. An amazing story.
I wish that you could see me because my mouth is still open. David, this is his fifth team since week 15 last year. Okay, he has spent 5 days in Minnesota. He was released by Arizona at the trade deadline. He's been in Minnesota after the Kirk Cousins injury. He's out for the season with the Achilles, which is so sad. 5 days. He has not taken a snap in practice. He has had the playbook for 5 days, and he does not even know the name of his receivers or teammates.
That just bizarre to me. When you think about all the work it takes to integrate a team effort and camaraderie and chemistry, and people talk about a quarterback and a receiver developing an understanding and a feel for the game together, and yet he just came in and started throwing the ball around to guys he didn't even know.
It really, what a shining star. I mean, completed 20 of 30 passes for 158 yards and 2 touchdowns, and he added a team high 66 yards rushing and a score on the ground. You know what? That is called lemonade out of lemons, because you get released from an Arizona team, you know, that's flailing, wonder what's going to happen. And let's not forget, this is a road win. In fact, I could say I slept with the Minnesota Vikings because I was in the same hotel with them in Atlanta this
excuse
weekend.
Excuse me?
Yes. I slept in the same hotel with the Minnesota Vikings. I got up Sunday morning and I'm like, those are a lot of really big people. What is that bus? Who are those buses? We were in Atlanta visiting family, but
confession
in the
time
same
here.
Hotel. So I think I'm good. I'm good juju for Josh Dobbs.
I'd say for the whole team, maybe.
hey, now.
Well, it really was a bizarre game because the Vikings were down to what was their number 4 quarterback in Josh Dobbs, and they were playing out with 2 of their top 3 receivers out, Justin Jefferson and KJ Osborne. And then Cam Akers left, and sadly, it looks like he's got a torn ACL.
Yes, he does.
Vikings have been really snake-bit by injuries.
No, they really have. But I'll tell you what a bright spot in Josh Jobs, and I'm so happy for him. Team number five, fifth one's the charm.
I mean, Vikings now 5-4, so they're in the hunt for a wild card, and who knows how far Josh Jobs can take them. He will be the starting quarterback next week.
Unbelievable. Love it.
All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with the Swami, Patrick Creighton, a show host on KFNC Houston. And we're going to ask him about the Texans' big win yesterday and what he sees in C.J. Stroud. That up next year on Sports Map Radio.